everyone knows you could speed up aging from like smoking, for example, but no one really positioned it as, well, you could actually slow it down. What if we were to address all of the hallmarks of aging simultaneously?
Welcome to the Siim Lund podcast. My name is Siim Lund, and today our guest is Chris Mirabal. Chris is an entrepreneur and the founder and CEO of Novus Labs. He's also interested in longevity and slowing down his speed of aging. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you. And you are one of those people who are also doing this kind of a Brian Johnson-like experiment with their health and longevity by trying to optimize all these different biomarkers and their biological age to like to be on a lower level than their chronological age. So I'm like happy to have you on the podcast, and we're going to discuss different things of your results and your routines as well, of how to people, how do they can implement these kind of similar routines related to, you know, diet, exercise and supplements, and also improve their longevity in the process. But how did you like get into this field, and what got you interested in trying to, you know, improve your biological age?
Yeah, great question. So I've been doing this for a while, actually. My initial interest in health started when I was 12 years old, and I started reading Men's Health magazine here in the US. And but then when I was 16, I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And when you nearly lose your life, you start thinking about different things, and you look at health in a different way than a typical teenager does. So whereas prior to that experience, I was looking at health from the superficial side of just wanting to be in great shape and be attractive and play sports well. After that experience, it turned into a deeper appreciation for biology and the avoidance or absence of disease, and trying to live as healthy as I can for as long as I can, because I never wanted to be laying in a hospital bed again, wondering if I would wake up the next morning or not. So that experience had a really profound impact on my perspectives, life perspectives in general, but specifically how I looked at health. And so I was interested in longevity from that point forward, though I didn't think of it in the terms of longevity ever since the scientific and biological approach to lifespan has started more than 10 years ago. That has informed my thinking a lot. But at the time, it was really just, how can I avoid getting another brain tumor or cancer, heart disease, and so on for that matter. And so I've been a entrepreneur for my adult life, but in my personal life, I've been kind of obsessive about all of this, about health and optimizing it, and spent a lot of time just going straight to the primary sources, leveraging PubMed, for example. I would have ideas in my mind, and then I would look for the studies on PubMed and try to come up with my own perspectives on things. And about 10 years ago, as part of that, I came across the paper, The Hallmarks of Aging, which is now a famous paper. It's a seminal paper that it was a meta-analysis that looked at many other historical studies, hundreds of them across animals and humans. And it identified the, at the time, 9 hallmarks of aging, or the 9 biological mechanisms that take place when we get older across animals and humans. And that was an eye-opening paper for me, because it, first of all, it gave me a lens through which I could look at my own aging and disease risk from, right? I could, rather than just quote unquote trying to be healthy and following what like the medical establishment will tell you makes you healthy, I could actually get to a more fundamental level of health. That is the biological side of these mechanisms of aging. So the question then turned into, what could I do to optimize these biological hallmarks of aging and slow down their digression? And then the second thing that it woke me up to was this idea that aging is actually something that's malleable. That concept had never crossed my mind prior to seeing this paper 10 years ago. And that was so empowering, because then I realized that, you know, everyone knows you could speed up aging from like smoking, for example, but no one really positioned it as, well, you could actually slow it down. And not everything you do for your health is going to slow it down, but certain things, if done properly, can slow it down. So that completely transformed my thinking. And eventually, a few years ago, and we can talk about this, but back in about 2017, 2018, I had an idea for what is now Novus, which is a very novel, unique approach to aging.
Mm. Yeah, it's the hallmarks of aging are pretty famous right now, and they've actually like updated the list from the original 9 hallmarks of aging to now there it's like 13, if I'm not mistaken, or 12, and they probably will add a few more in a few years. So it's pretty interesting to see, like, these are the things that go wrong with aging, during aging, and it also gives you like certain targets to aim for in terms of like therapies and routines to, like, you know, improve upon.
Exactly. Yes. There, as you mentioned, there are 3 new hallmarks. So it was at the 10-year anniversary of that initial paper, the same authors, based on additional scientific research that has evolved over the past decade, added 3 more to those initial 9. So that includes inflammaging, which is this chronic inflammatory state that it increases just as we get older. We have more and more inflammation building in our bodies. Another is disabled autophagy. So this is the process in which our bodies, our immune systems largely are identifying old, not well functioning cells and basically eating them up or recycling their parts. Excuse me. And the third is microbiome dysbiosis. So we're learning about all of these gut organ axes. I believe there are 9 of them. Our gut impacts our brain, our skin, and our heart and other organs. And this is actually shown or been found to change dramatically. That is our microbiome composition as we age.
Mm. Yeah. What are the other ones, the first 9?
Good question. So let's see if I can remember them. I might look at some notes just as a cheat sheet to recall. But we can go through each of them. I can give just a very quick overview of what each one of them is. So the first is mitochondrial dysfunction. So mitochondria, the power plants of our cells, as we get older, we have fewer of them. And those that we do have are not functioning as well. So our cells are not getting as much energy as they would normally be getting to be able to function properly. And obviously, energy is what enables the cells to carry out their functions. The second is cellular senescence. So this has grown in popularity in the last couple of years. This is the idea of cells. Oftentimes you'll hear them being referred to as zombie cells. So this is when a cell is kind of shut down by the body. And sometimes this is because the cell might be cancerous, for example. It's not the only reason, but that is oftentimes one of the reasons why a cell will turn senescent. And you would think that this is good, and in many ways that is good. You don't want a proliferating cancer cell, for example. But the problem is that these senescent cells can then start secreting inflammatory molecules that then cause nearby cells to also become damaged and eventually can potentially turn senescent as well. And this process increases exponentially as we age. It's actually one of the reasons why our skin wrinkles. So cellular senescence is something that a lot of researchers are focusing on to try to destroy these senescent cells with substances called senolytics, which, if you take the derivative of the word, lytic is like lysis, like slicing in half the senescent cell and destroying it. Next is loss of proteostasis. So this is the process. Proteostasis is the process in which the body is folding proteins and making sure that they are actually being utilized properly. As we get older, these proteins can start to accumulate inside of and outside of the cells, and this prevents the cells from being able to function properly. It's almost like garbage accumulating inside and outside of your home, and it's going to make it harder for you to get in and out of your home and use it as you otherwise would. And so to that point, the next one is altered intercellular communication. And so our cells, they are a vast network. They are a very advanced network, and they are all communicating with each other by secreting molecules that will hit other cells, and then those cells will react to those molecules. And so if you have something like loss of proteostasis, just as an example, if it's blocking the receptor sites on these cells, it's going to make it harder for these cells to be able to communicate with each other. And as you can imagine, if cells aren't communicating with each other well, they're not performing the function that they otherwise would. And by extension, the tissue and the organs are not going to be well-equipped or fully fulfilling their function given a particular circumstance or stressor. Next is genomic instability. So this is one that everyone knows of. It's the idea of DNA damage. It's why we wear sunblock, for example, to avoid the damaging effects of ultraviolet rays. And for a long time, it was believed that this is the reason why we get older, in like full stop, that this is why we get older. For decades, this was largely believed. But it's since been found that this is just one component of many, a dozen at least, of the reasons why we get older. But it is nonetheless important. So DNA can become damaged from various stressors, whether that be radiation like ultraviolet radiation or foods that we eat, lifestyle habits, and so on. And these mutations to the DNA can lead to things like cancer or require excess cellular division, which to that point, the next hallmark is telomere shortening. And telomeres are the protective end caps of our chromosomes, which our chromosomes contain our DNA. And each time we do a cellular division, that telomere is going to get shorter and shorter and shorter. And it's okay when they're relatively long, but eventually you hit something called the telomeric brink, which is when it's kind of like the tipping point where your telomeres have become so short that they're not really protecting the DNA as well anymore. And then that's when we see significant increases in different types of diseases. For example, gastrointestinal cancer increases when your telomeres are too short. And so, as you can imagine, if you have a lot of damage to your cells and DNA, you need to replace those cells more. So your telomeres are going to shorten more frequently or more rapidly, and this is going to contribute to the aging process. The next one is epigenetic alteration. So on the subject of DNA, DNA is kind of like the hard-written code for each one of us. But then from there, the question is which genes are activated and deactivated. And it varies per cell and per organ, but it also varies as we age. And as we age, certain genes turn on that shouldn't. For example, they might be pro-inflammatory genes, and certain genes turn off that shouldn't. These might be anti-inflammatory genes or protective genes that might repair DNA and so on. And as we get older, these alterations then lead to our bodies not really upkeeping themselves as well as they ordinarily would. And that's why there's this whole field called cellular reprogramming that's a lot of well-known researchers in the longevity field are focused on, trying to reprogram these cells to express a younger epigenome. If your audience has ever heard of the term Yamanaka factors, this is where they play in. After that is deregulated nutrient sensing. So nutrients being fats or lipids and carbohydrates, sugars, and to some degree amino acids and proteins. These nutrients, our body needs to be able to detect them and then know what to do with them. And as we get older, the body is not as capable of doing that. So that's why we see things like blood glucose levels increasing, insulin levels increasing, triglycerides and LDL cholesterol levels increasing. So these are all potentially damaging as those levels get higher and higher. There's a higher occurrence of diseases, especially cardiovascular disease. And then finally, the final one of the original nine was stem cell exhaustion. So stem cells are the cells that give birth to all of our new cells, right? They are kind of like the photocopy machine that is then generating all of the copies that we need to be able to survive. And as we get older, our stem cells, they become dysfunctional or they die off. And so as a result, our tissues are less replenished and they aren't maintained as well as they otherwise would be. Oh, I think you're on mute.
Sorry, yeah, that's a long list of the hallmarks of aging. And, you know, you can imagine that all of these are so interconnected with each other as well, and they affect each other's function. Like autophagy affects mitochondrial function and cell senescence and inflammation. And likewise, inflammation affects genomic stability and telomere shortening. So yeah, it's a very complex process, obviously. And even now we know the hallmarks of aging kind of, or they're used as the hallmarks of aging, then, you know, we still don't have, quote unquote, a cure for aging, or we don't have a solution yet. We're just, you know, learning individually of how do we manipulate these hallmarks and how do we improve, yeah, like the outcomes of people.
Yeah, so all of these interact with each other. That's a great point that you raised. So when one is damaged, the other ones in one way or another are also going to then have a negative repercussion from that, some more directly than others, but ultimately there's kind of a reverberating effect across these. So that's likely part of the reason, at least, why as we get older, we see aging becomes exponential. So the health of someone and even their physical appearance going from 20 to 25 years old is not quite as dramatic as going from 75 to 80 or 80 to 85. As we get older, we see the decline in health accelerating. And if you look at charts of morbidity, for example, and mortality, it is literally exponential. So it's largely because of their interactions. And this was an insight that I had back when I was first thinking of the idea for Novos back in 2017, 2018, which was, what if we were to address all of the hallmarks of aging simultaneously rather than just one or two at a time? Back then, I was attending biotech conferences and I was hearing scientists present with their concepts or with their companies and the interventions that they were in the R&D phase. And it became immediately apparent that, first of all, most of what they were working on was very far out into the future. It was not anything that I would be able to personally use or share with my friends and family and loved ones anytime soon. But the second thing was that they were focusing on only one or two of the mechanisms at a time. And this is largely because of, first of all, just the scientific method of being reductionistic, trying to simplify things as much as possible so that they can fully understand it, and then only adding complexity after something seems to be fully understood or adequately understood. The second reason is that the FDA and by extension EFSA in Europe, they want you to focus on specific medical indications. And so the approach for that is oftentimes start with something relatively simple. Not to mention, when it comes to prescription drugs, for example, it is typically a single molecule that is modified. Maybe they were inspired by nature, it's modified, and then it's patented, but it's nothing complex. My idea was to create something that was completely natural. All of the ingredients are found in nature. And as a result, the ingredients are considered generally recognized as safe or GRAS status. So the FDA would not stop us from being able to produce this. It would be considered an over-the-counter, safe for general use supplement. And then based on that, I would be able to mix and combine different ingredients that would then be able to have a synergistic effect, at least conceptually. We have since proven that, but back then it was just a theory, to be able to address all of these hallmarks simultaneously. And I talked to scientists, well-known ones, and asked them these questions, whether they believe that this would be a ideal approach, an efficacious approach to aging. And it was unanimous agreement. People from Harvard, MIT, Salk Institute, you name it, they were all in agreement that this would probably have the biggest impact on aging by addressing all of the hallmarks at once.
Yeah. And with Novos, you created this Novos Core supplement, the first product that you had, which was,
yes,
there's a drink powder. And what are the ingredients? And like, have you done any like clinical trials on this, or what's the like proof of concept kind of?
Sure. So this is Novos Core. It's hard to see with the background filter, but this is Novos Core. It's these daily sachets. So you tear one open, you pour it into water or into a smoothie. We have orange flavored with no sugar. And then we also have an unflavored version if you put it into a drink, like a smoothie or something. It's the first formula to address the 12 hallmarks of aging. We file for patents on the formula. The ingredients, I can read them off quickly. And then I can tell you about some of the research and results that we found from that research. So glycine, malate, specifically coming from magnesium malate, calcium, alpha-ketoglutarate, glucosamine sulfate, rhodiola rosea root extract, L-theanine, hyaluronic acid. Specifically, believe it or not, hyaluronic acid, which is great for skin health from the inside out, hydrating your skin and your joints and so on. The reason we included it, although that's a nice to have, was for the acetylglucosamine molecule that is present within hyaluronic acid and has lifespan extending effects. Mm-hmm. Fisetin, organic ginger root extract, pterostilbene, and a microdose of lithium, which if you'd like to go into lithium, a lot of people, their eyebrows raise when they hear lithium, but there's great reasons for including lithium. Mm. So as well as vitamin C, I think I left that out. So the results that we've found so far from our formulation, the very first study that we ran was an in vitro study at a lab in New York that had done $7 million worth of studies prior to ours, the same type of study that they ran for us. And they warned us before we commissioned them for the study that they had never really seen any significant benefits from any ingredients, whether prescription or over-the-counter natural substances. And we said, let's run the study anyway. And the study, it induced radiation to human cells. And there was, of course, the control with no Novos. And then there were different dosages of Novos across different tests. And we found that we were able to reduce DNA damage by as much as 77%. This is in the form of oxidative damage. The result was so significant that the scientists called their CEO to make him aware of the results before they even called us. And I actually, less than a year ago, saw that CEO at a biotech event and asked him firsthand. And he said, yes, like 100%, this was the best results. I mean, we were shocked to see these types of results. So to that point I made earlier about us seeing synergies, this is the first proof point that there is something synergistic happening with our combined ingredients that you wouldn't have seen with these individual ingredients. Mm. The second study we ran was looking at cellular senescence. This was done at an academic lab, Newcastle University in the United Kingdom. And for this, we compared our results to the prescription drug rapamycin. This is the gold standard for longevity drugs. And when looking at cellular senescence, we were able to reduce the size of the senescent cells in human cells by the same order of magnitude as rapamycin. We were within percentages of each other. And this was very significant. It was more than a 50% reduction in the size of the senescent cells. So that was amazing for us to see, because every researcher compares results to rapamycin. And the fact that we had essentially the same results was really encouraging for us. Another study that we ran looked at, again, DNA damage, but this time by administering chemotherapeutic to human keratinocytes. And so these are skin cells. And the chemotherapeutics are incredibly harsh. I mean, they essentially destroy all cells. The hope is that they kill the cancer cells before they kill the person that it's being administered to. That's how intense chemotherapeutics are. And they go beyond oxidative damage to the DNA. They actually cause single and double strand breaks to the DNA. So the analogy I give is oxidative damage is like having a car that starts to rust, whereas a double strand break is like slicing the car down its axle. Like, you're completely demolishing, mutilating that DNA. And we were able to reduce that by a very significant margin. I can't give exact numbers because we're working on a paper that will be published soon for that, or the researchers at the university are. That was done at University of Bologna, by the way. That was a very encouraging result. Another result that we have more recently is this process called oxytocin ferroptosis. So this is a process that is associated with Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and forms of cancer. And at the Salk Institute, they ran this study and they compared us to a R&D prescription drug. So this is a drug that has not been approved by the FDA yet, but it is intended specifically for Alzheimer's and dementia. And it is targeting this specific mechanism, being oxytocin ferroptosis. And we were able to reduce the amounts of oxytocin ferroptosis by halfway between our single most effective ingredient at doing that, which is fisetin, and that prescription drug. So again, it goes to show the synergistic nature of our formula, which is that fisetin, which can have an effect on oxytocin ferroptosis, Novos got 50% closer to this prescription drug that's in R&D for that same process of oxytocin ferroptosis. We also showed in that same study that we were able to reduce inflammation in these human cells as well. And then finally, when it comes to humans, we did a case study where we administered biological age tests to people prior to them consuming our Novos Core and Novos Boost formulas. Novos Boost is just an add-on to Novos Core. It's one single ingredient. It's NMN. After 6 months, they were tested again. Now, we didn't administer the test. It was a third-party lab. So we had, you know, we were not in touch with any of the blood lab results or anything. That was done independently. The only thing that we did was ship them the Novos products, and we asked them to not change their lifestyles. So don't integrate more exercise or watch your diet and make sure you continue to eat essentially the same way that you have been. Try to keep everything constant. And we found that 73% of the participants slowed down their biological pace of aging by a statistically significant margin. I believe it averaged 1.5 months per year of slower biological aging, according to the Dunedin pace clock. Second thing is that 0% of people accelerated their aging. You would expect, some people would have accelerated their aging because of lifestyle stressors that come up. You know, maybe they're very stressed at work, or they haven't been sleeping as well, or they drank some alcohol. But none of the participants accelerated their aging. And the p-value of this, the probability that this was a coincidence, is less than 1 in 1,000. So typically a p-value that you need for statistical significance is 0.05. For us, it was 0.001. So this is enough for us to now be running some clinical trials to try to further validate this. The last thing I'll leave off on is that we have also done a mouse study. I can't share those results yet because it's not complete, but we're very optimistic, and we're excited to be able to share those results in the months ahead.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I always like if, you know, you have actual studies on the whatever supplement that is being recommended, so that you actually see that, although, you know, there are sales studies, this is always like the first stages of these this kind of research. You first do it in cells, then animals, and eventually in humans. But yeah, it always takes time. But it's, you know, good to see some research being done on these molecules. But you mentioned the people getting a slower speed of aging. If I'm not mistaken, then one of the people at the top of the rejuvenation leaderboard, Julie Clark. I think she is also taking Novos Core, right?
Yes. So the Rejuvenation Olympics Leadership Board, which had thousands of submissions, Novos as a company, we've got, I believe, 4 people in the top 10 list. There's 2 leadership boards. And so one is the best biological age, and then the other is the relative change. For best biological age, we've got 3 out of the top 10. And for relative change, we have 2 of the top 10. That's more than any other company, if I recall correctly. And not to mention that we're an over-the-counter, affordable, easy option for people to access, whereas the other companies that are competing are typically medical clinics that are very expensive and are under the supervision of medical doctors and so on. So we're all about making things really simple and accessible and achievable. So it's that much more dare I say, impressive that we were able to achieve this with everyday people achieving these results. So yes, Julie Gibson Clark, she's been covered by the press a fair amount. If you do a search for her, Ben Greenfield recently did a podcast interview with her. It was about an hour long. And she talks about Novos, and as she says herself, she's not compensated. We don't do anything with her. She's not an influencer, nothing like that. She just believes in our product so much. She just wants to get the word out about us. And she's ranked number 2 globally for her slow pace of aging. We have another woman, Amy Hardison. She's in her 60s. She is ranked number 5, I believe. A guy, Rick Chiovarelli, he's ranked number 7. These people are living relatively normal lifestyles. They're not going even as far as I go with my health. And they're achieving these amazing results.
Yeah. And they are doing exercise and eating a good diet and sleeping enough and those kind of things. So it's, you know, in that case, you know, it's very hard to know like how big of an effect does certain things play. Like, you know, I'm also like, you know, more vigorous exerciser than the average person. And I'm more like, you know, as a consistent and disciplined with those things. And then it's kind of thinking, okay, we don't know exactly how much exercise is good. And, you know, it's hard to pinpoint exactly the optimal dose with these things. And you need to kind of just experiment yourself and see how does your body react, and how does your like other lifestyle factors also like affect those results.
Yeah. So 2 points to raise. One is that, yes, they are, each of them, living relatively healthy lifestyles, right? So they are getting good sleep. They are physically active. The guy, Rick, for example, I believe plays pickleball. Amy, does, cardio, I think 5 or 6 days out of the week, on like an elliptical machine. So they're physically active. They do have, adequate sleep. They are eating healthy. They have a lot of vegetables in their diet, but their results, they all improved from the before they were taking Novos to after they were taking Novos, and their lifestyles did not change significantly. So that's one thing that's important to emphasize. And then to your point about like how much is too much, I think a lot of people, they think more is always more, but sometimes it's not. And this is something I myself need to follow, because I'm like you, I push myself very hard. I just turned 40 this past weekend. And my goal has been to outperform my 20-year-old self in many different capacities, everything from my mile time to run 1 mile. I've gotten myself down to 5 minutes and 34 seconds. So I'm within just a few seconds of my best time when I was in my 20s. I'm deadlifting, not as much as my all-time max, but considering how fast I'm running, I'm deadlifting, relatively speaking, more than I ever did while I was running fast. Same thing with pull-ups and so on. So I'm challenging myself in all these ways, but at the same time, you can overdo it. There was a study that I came across, and I can't recall who the authors were. It was something I saw relatively quickly, but we did publish it on our website in an article where we talk about the effects of exercise on epigenetic aging. And there is an analysis done of people in terms of, I believe, their step count. And there is a certain sweet spot for step count for the lowest epigenetic age. And then when people went beyond that, there is a slight increase in the epigenetic age. So you're still doing better than most people, like the vast majority of people, if you overdo it, but you're not doing quite as well as those who have the balance.
Yeah, that's true. Like I remember when I did my own donut and paste tests, then the first time I did a test, like I was doing the least exercise and eating the most calories, and I got the best result. Which is kind of funny. Like the first test I did was 0.62, which was like very good. But
amazing.
At that time, I wasn't doing like almost any cardio, and I was mostly lifting weights only, and I was like 4 kilos heavier than I am right now. And the last test, then I did the first test. I got inspired by this. Okay, I'm gonna try to really maximize my like aging speed with this, and went more like, let's say, regular with cardio. I just started doing more cardio, and I lost about like 3 to 4 kilograms as well, of mostly like body fat and maybe a little bit of muscle as well. But point is that I did all this effort, but my speed of aging, based on the test at least, went to like 0.65. And then the last test was 0.69 as well. But I did have like some infections around the time, which do skew the results as well, with like COVID and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's kind of funny that you want to do more good to your health, and you end up, at least based on this test, you might be doing too much. But at the same time, like my VO2 max got higher, my blood work got better. So, you know, it's hard to say which markers are like superior. Are the traditional biomarkers and traditional blood work, which we have like a lot of data, are those better than this kind of new and novel epigenetic markers, which don't have that much data, but are still kind of interesting to think about?
Yeah. And I wouldn't underestimate the impact that something like COVID could have on your epigenetic results too, because that causes so much inflammation in our bodies, not to mention activating the immune system, but as an extension of the immune activation, our bodies become inflamed. And that can definitely have a pronounced impact, less so on the Dunedin pace clock than others, but especially some of the earlier clocks like the Horvath clock and some of the clocks that provide a biological age output as opposed to a pace of aging output. Those oftentimes can be significantly impacted by COVID and infections in general. And it typically seems to be like 3 to 4 months that you need to wait before you test again for that to get back down to normal levels again and be a fair test.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think I got the COVID somewhere in end of July, and I did a test in end of August, the second test, then the third test, yeah. I think I did, yeah, in the beginning of October or something like that. So yeah, maybe I haven't tested it again because it's, you know, it's a pretty expensive test and it's something like I don't want to do, you know, 6 times a year. I'm not going to do the test 6 times a year.
Yeah. Well, that's within 3 months, right? Each one of those tests that you did after being infected with COVID. So I would consider, you know, the possibility of doing another one. But I agree with you. I have access to these tests. I could expense them and do them every week. Not that I would do that, but I could. I personally do once every 6 months or so. I think that's plenty. And for most people, once a year is probably enough because you want to also consider the confounding factor of seasonality, right? Like our lifestyles are considerably different in winter and December than they are in July in the summer. In terms of physical activity, UV exposure, our social lives, the foods we eat, how much alcohol we consume, how much time we spend laying in bed or on a couch versus up and active. So those can really have an impact on the pace of aging. So if you want to have a more sound test to see how your lifestyle and supplements and so on are impacting it, I would consider if budget is an issue, just do it once a year. And that's kind of talking against my business, right? Like I would love to say do it every month, but no, I think once a year is enough.
Right. And what are some other like markers you kind of track for your longevity? Like, are there any like valuable biomarkers or blood tests that you think are like a good assessment of aging and longevity?
Sure. So
besides the epigenetic clocks.
Yeah. So, well, I'll start with what we have in the Novo's age clock, but then there is a lot more to it than that. So the Novo's age clock includes the Dunedin pace clock, which is the most accurate and precise of the biological age clocks out there. There are many other clocks out there on the market that are not transparent about what the algorithm is. And many of them actually even use saliva, which is inferior to blood. But a lot of these tests are actually first-generation tests. They're trained on chronological age, which, you know, that might make sense for some sort of detective work. If there's a homicide and you try to figure out who the killer was, you want to know how old they are chronologically. It's a clue. So for forensic science, it makes sense. But for us, what's the point of a test that's going to guesstimate or estimate how old we are chronologically when we have our birth certificate and our license for that, right? We want something that's going to tell us how old we are biologically, which is essentially morbidity risk, mortality risk, and the quality of life metrics. So how likely is it that we can stand up without having to use assistance, or how strong our grip strength is, or what our gait speed is, and so on. So the Dunedin pace clock is trained on all of this and more. And so we want these later generation tests, the third generation ones. That's why we chose to license the Dunedin pace clock, even though we could have made one of our own and been more profitable. It wouldn't have been honest to our consumers, our customers. We wanted to provide the best. And that's why we licensed Dunedin pace. The second is biological age output, which we acknowledge is not as accurate as that first test. So we encourage our customers to really focus on that Dunedin pace clock, but people are still curious. They want to know that biological age. So we give it to them, but we caution people not to rely on that so much. And then the third is telomere length. So we talked about telomeres being one of the hallmarks or mechanisms of aging. And the key for that is you don't want it to get too short. So when we present the results to you, we present them as a percentile by your chronological age. And as long as your percentile is something reasonable, 40, 50 or higher, that's great. But if it's in a low percentile, that's something you should keep an eye on, because that means that it's getting significantly shorter by your age, and it might at some point become an issue. So you should look into ways to try to slow down the shortening of your telomeres. So going beyond our test, other metrics that I look at, you mentioned VO2 max. That's a fantastic one. I do training to intentionally increase my VO2 max. Let's see. There's also different types of metabolomic clocks out there. So there's one that I use called EOYO, or YOLO. I don't know how exactly they pronounce it. I think it's YOLO. It's I-O-L-L-O, like you only live once, right? YOLO measures like more than 600 different biomarkers, and then they provide a biological age output. For that, it computed mine as being 29% slower aging. By comparison, Dunedin and Pace calculates me as being 31% slower aging. So that would be the 0.69, as you referenced, you got for one of your results. But then there are also many other tests that I've run. I have access to scientists that are able to run the different algorithms for R&D purposes. In addition, just taking the same methylation data and then running it multiple times. And across all of those tests, it averages out to 39% slower aging. So that would be like a 0.61 across, you know, that's the Hannum test and the Horvath test and the Pheno age test and so on. So there's all of these different algorithms, but I would keep it simple and stick with the Dunedin Pace. Beyond those, obviously, you know, this is a very controversial topic, is cholesterol and LDL. And you've got a lot of people saying that LDL is not nearly as damaging as it is made out to be. I'm personally conservative about that. I think that there's no proof that it isn't damaging, especially ApoB levels. So I track that, and I just naturally have, like, based on my genetics, familial hypercholesterolemia, not super high, but above 200 typically. So that's something that I keep an eye out on. And now that I'm in my 40s, it's something that I would consider potentially a statin for, of course, being mindful of side effects and keeping a close eye on that. What else? Other things I've looked at, pulse wave velocity. There are devices like the Withing scale, for example, where you can measure the velocity of your pulse waves, and you want that to be as slow as possible. So somewhat counterintuitive. Everyone thinks faster is better, but actually when it comes to your blood vessels, you want the velocity to be slow, because if it's fast, that means that the blood vessels are stiff. So the wave travels faster. And if they're flexible, it's going to move more slowly. So that's something that increases as we age. Diet and exercise can impact that. Even supplements, for example, omega-3s and vitamin D can counterintuitively potentially increase your pulse wave velocity, not necessarily permanently in a negative way, but acutely in the short term while taking the supplements, it might give you a higher output. So that scale, for your American viewers, if you're going to purchase it, you have to make sure you buy the European version, because the FDA restricts the US version and doesn't provide the pulse wave velocity as an output. Another is visceral fat. That's worth taking a look at. If you're super fit, then you probably have very little. But for people who are more sedentary, visceral fat is something that you want to keep an eye out on and make sure that you can reduce that as much as possible. Novos, we offer something called Face Age, which is facial AI software technology, where you can take a selfie, and then based on a data set of millions of people, we're able to tell you how young your face is perceived to be. And it's quite accurate within a couple of years for most people. But it will also then give you skin health metrics as well, like wrinkles, pore size, skin inflammation, and so on. And this is something that you can kind of just keep track of, seeing like how your face is aging over time. To that point, something very interesting, going back to the Dunedin Pace study, the researchers actually took the 10 slowest aging people, the 10 average aging people, and the 10 fastest aging people, and they used computer software to merge each of their faces, both male and female. And when you look at them side by side, so it's three males, three females, the 10 slowest aging people, I did a speech at a medical conference called A4M last weekend, and I presented this to people in the audience. I asked them, how old would you guess the 10 slowest aging people were? And they all guessed 35. They were actually 45 years old. And then the 10 fastest aging people, who are also 45 years old, how old would you guess they were? And they guessed 55. So there's a 20-year gap in perceived age of people who are the fastest aging people, according to Dunedin and Pace, and the slowest aging people. So that goes to show that what we physically look like can actually be captured by perception of aging. And this face age test that we offer for completely for free, you can find it at novoslabs.com/faceage, is also something that's pretty cool for people to get a baseline on and then track as they're proceeding with their longevity journey.
Hmm. Yeah, that's super interesting with the face part. And I think there are studies on centenarian offspring as well. So the people who have apparently good genetics in their family, and they do the same kind of computer image of all the people who are in the centenarian offspring group, and their face looks also like slightly younger on average than the regular control group. So yeah, like centenarians obviously just, or most of the centenarians live long because of their genetics. And if you're a centenarian offspring, then you have like a massive reduction in the risk of heart disease and other chronic diseases. And apparently you also like age slower in terms of your facial aging if you have centenarian parents.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you ran the Dunedin clock on them, they would also have slower paces of aging relative to the average person too.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, I mean, the obviously there's dozens of different biomarkers that can also add to the list. Like, you know, you can measure inflammation directly with CRP and blood sugar levels and hemoglobin A1C and everything else. So we're not going to go into details with all those markers. But so what do you do then to achieve good results with your speed of aging and biological ages? And what do you do for your like overall longevity? What's your routine?
My routine, let's see. There's a lot to it. Let's see if I can simplify this. So we'll start with diet. So for food, for the most part, most days of the week, I'm probably eucaloric. So I'm eating as many calories as I'm burning, or I'm slightly hypocaloric. There might be one day a week and the weekends where I might eat a little bit more, have some fun. I'm not as strict with my diet. And so net, I'm probably more or less eucaloric for the week, or very slightly hypocaloric. I do a 16-8 time restricted feeding window. So from basically 12 or 11 a.m. or 12 p.m. until about 7 or 8 p.m. is when I will have my last meal. During that feeding window, on weekdays, I'm having typically relatively low carb meals for most of the day until the evening. That's kind of backwards. Ideally, I'm having the higher carbs in the morning and lower carbs in the evening, just based on metabolism and our body's ability to deal with blood glucose. But I find that I just focus that much more well when I'm having low carbs during the day with my work. And so it's more of a choice or a sacrifice that I make by having the carbs later at night. But I find that if I don't have enough carbs at night, my sleep suffers, and I track it with, you know, Oura Ring or sometimes with the Apple Watch. And it subjectively, I just feel much worse if I go too long having too few carbs. It's probably something to do with serotonin production and then that being converted to melatonin, and me just not sleeping through the night as soundly and not feeling as refreshed in the morning. So I need to get those carbs, especially because I exercise a lot, which I'll talk about in a minute. And my meals are composed of a lot of vegetables, Brussels sprouts, spinach, broccoli, cauliflower, mushrooms, and so on. I have some legumes like lots of lentils and some other beans as well. I have a moderate amount of white meat, chicken, poultry. I'll have a moderate amount of whole eggs, including the yolk. I'll have a higher amount of fish. I have some like salmon almost every evening. And if not salmon, then some other type of fish is typically my dinner. I don't have much, if any, red meat in my diet. If I do, it might be in the form of organ meat like liver. I'll have some liver maybe once every 2, 3, 4 weeks in my diet, just because they're replete with nutrients, lots of nutrients in organ meat. And what else? Post-workout, I'll have a smoothie. That smoothie will be based on a plant-based protein. It's, I believe, pea protein and hemp protein and a couple of others mixed in. But then it also has a lot of different fibers from the plants and so on. It's the Garden of Life brand that I'm currently using. And then I throw in some other things into that smoothie, including, you know, carrots and celery and some frozen kale, some mushroom powder, like a blend of, I think 6 or 7 different mushrooms in the scoop, some creatine monohydrate as well. Those are the main things that I have in that smoothie. And that's like high level overview. That's pretty much what I do for my diet. On my blog, slowmyage.com, I do have a blog post specifically talking about diet. And I also mentioned in there some results from the NHANES study that found that most people, practically everyone, even if they're eating healthy diets, if not having a deficiency in a critical nutrient, they at least have an inadequacy in a critical nutrient. It's typically something like vitamin D or vitamin K, maybe choline, maybe magnesium. So as healthy as I eat and as healthy as many people in your audience eat, you're probably still running some sort of inadequacy. And so that's why I'll also then supplement with just a basic multivitamin, but a very high quality one. So I use the Pure Encapsulations O-N-E formula, but Life Extension brand makes it 2 per day capsule, which is very affordable. I think it's only about $10 or $12 a month. That's another option for people to consider. So with supplementation, in addition to the multi, of course, I have Novos Core. This is 12 ingredients in one. I have Novos Vital, which is our newest product. So this is specifically for organ health in their daily chews. So they aren't quite gummies, but similar texture. They have a sweet tropical flavor to them, but less than 1 gram of sugar. And the ingredients for this are trehalose, inulin, raw apple cider vinegar containing acetic acid, of course, rutin, natokinase, lutein, and zeaxanthin. So this is essentially 7 supplements in one. So, and then I'll have Novos Boost, which is just NMN. So between those 3 products, I'm getting 20 supplements in very convenient form factors that make it super easy. I'm not, you know, just downing a lot of pills. In terms of other pills, I do take vitamin D plus K, fish oil, omega-3 fish oils. That's all that's coming to mind at the moment. I might be missing a couple, but, that's the majority of it. And then at night, sometimes if I've had like a very stressful day, and when I say stressful, I'm mainly referring to like physical stress, like maybe I worked out too hard and my body's just too amped up. I might have valerian extract that works very well for me to put me to sleep, and a time release 300 microgram melatonin. That's pretty much my stack. Exercise. I exercise typically 6 days out of the week. The one day that I don't, I'm still active. I'm walking a lot, but I'm not, you know, pushing myself hard. I weightlift 3 of those days. I used to weightlift more throughout my life, but now I've kind of balanced it since I moved to Florida. It's the weather's great. So I want to get outside more, and I find myself doing more cardio than weightlifting. But one of those days will be chest triceps. Another will be back biceps. Another, will be, lower body, predominantly deadlifts, and some shoulder exercises as well. And then on those days, I will also do like a light run, zone 2 cardio for the most part, for about 25 minutes. And then the days that I'm not weightlifting is when I'll push myself harder on the cardio. So on Saturdays, I'm doing a lot of intervals. I mentioned earlier, I'm trying to outdo my best mile time. So I'll start with a 2 mile light jog warm up. Then I'll run as fast as I can for that mile. And I'm shaving off a couple of seconds each week. And then after that, I'll do a bunch of intervals. So whether that be a quarter mile or a half mile, or as far as I can go for 2 minutes flat, or as far as I can go for 1 minute flat. And then I'll have walking interspersed in between each of those. And I'll typically do between 6 and 8 of those sets. And then other days I'll be doing, maybe more extended cardio. Like today I rode a bicycle for 45 minutes, and my heart rate was about 140 beats per minute for that ride. So that's exercise. Sleep, I'm very strict with. So I have, for example, the Philips Hue light bulbs in my home across my entire home. So when evening is coming, I'll change the light from this blue temperature light to a yellow, eventually the orange. And then about a half hour before bedtime, they'll switch to red. And that makes it super easy for me to fall asleep. When I put my head on the pillow, I'm out within 5 to 10 minutes. I wear earplugs when I sleep. I wear a sleep mask. I have a girlfriend who, might turn the light on and get up before me, or I have a dog that might make some noise. So this helps me to not be as disturbed. For your audience, oftentimes they might think that they're sleeping through the night, but the thing is that our minds are still hypervigilant while we're sleeping. For evolutionary reasons, we want to be aware if there's a predator. So you might be waking up without even realizing it, right? These micro arousals that can take place anytime there's a noise or a flash of light or something. So I try to minimize the chances that any of that happens throughout the night. And my quality of sleep is quite good as a result of that. Am I missing anything?
No, I think, yeah, I mean, these are the
terms of
most
categories.
Interesting topics people are interested in, like the supplements and the exercise routines. Of course, there's many like other things like stress management and those things, but it's not like as exciting for a lot of people. But what do you think? There's like a lot of people are doing very similar things in regards to like they exercise regularly, they have a good diet, and they take some supplements. What do you think is like the biggest determining factor for your health and results? What would be like, okay, this is the actual secret sauce that people like tend to neglect or underestimate?
Yeah, well, so I'll first acknowledge that I'm biased. I do really believe that Novos is having a significant impact on my results. And I'll give just a quick case in point example. My father, he had an epigenetic test done prior to us launching Novos Age. It was a third party epigenetic test. And he, his result came back as 1 year younger than his biological age, his chronological age. And then after taking our formula for 6 months, his result came back as minus 10 years from his chronological age. Right. We've also seen the results in our case study. We see the results from people like Julie, Amy, Rick, a woman named Lil Eski, who I didn't mention earlier. My results, on the other hand, I never had the before Novos test. I didn't try epigenetic testing before I had R&D versions of Novos. Before we launched for the public, I was taking my product for more than a year. And so I don't have that before test, unfortunately. But seeing the results from other people, also seeing the results from my father, who is genetically related to me, being so significant, I do think that at least a significant portion of my results are coming from it. Now, with that said, if I was living an unhealthy lifestyle, like smoking a pack a day and laying on the couch and not eating healthy, eating junk food, I would not be in this place. I mean, if I look at my genes, which I have a number of obesogenic genes. I have family history of obesity, family history of cardiovascular disease, family history of cancer. My mother passed away from pancreatic cancer while I was starting Novos. So I don't think I would be in a good place, not to mention I have my brain tumor, which I mentioned earlier. So I don't think I would be in a good place if I wasn't living a healthy lifestyle in and of itself. So that's the foundation. I think everyone should get a handle over their sleep, eat a lot more vegetables than they currently are, minimize the processed foods, and just be active. You don't have to run and lift like I do, but at least spend 90 minutes a day, ideally, just moving, like walking, dancing, doing whatever it is for you. You can wear an Oculus headset and break a sweat playing ping pong for all I care, right? But like, be active, do something for 90 minutes a day. I think if you have that foundation, I think that that's going to get you, it's like Pareto's principle, 80% of the way. And then different hacks like my formula. I would say also maybe consider the B vitamins, which you can find in the multivitamins I was mentioning, but like getting adequate B vitamins and methyl donors from foods like egg yolks, which contain choline and methyl donors, or trimethylglycine, or supplementing with choline. These things can also help to optimize your methylation. And these tests, these epigenetic tests, are based on methylation. So I think that that would also probably play a significant role in my results too.
Do you think you're like peaking right now? You're 40 years old. Are you like peaking with your health and fitness and biological age results, or do you think you still have more rooms for gains?
I think I have more room for gains. I have not felt, I mean, throughout my life, I haven't felt as healthy as I feel now, right? And there's no sign of that eclipsing. So if I look back over the like my 30s, I wasn't running as fast as I am now. So that entire decade of my 30s, I wasn't running this fast, including the second half of my 20s, I wasn't running this fast. I was running a lot, but I wasn't running at this speed, partly because I wasn't pushing myself, admittedly, to run at this pace. This is a new goal. Like when I turned 30, my goal was to do more pull-ups than I ever did in my life. And I wanted to outdo the Guinness record for more pull-ups in 60 seconds. And I personally hit more than 50 pull-ups. I think it was 54 pull-ups in 60 seconds. That was my goal at 30. And now my goal at 40 is to outdo my running time for the mile. But being able to achieve these numbers that I was achieving in my early 20s, while also balancing things like power lift with deadlift and pull up reps, as I'm doing right now, about 36, 37 pull ups in a set, not my personal best, but when you consider everything holistically, I'm feeling as good as I ever have. So I don't think I'm on the decline. I think that I'm kind of steady state. I'm not going to argue I'll be healthier than my entire life going forward, but to be able to maintain this for a long time, I think I can.
Mm. Yeah, it's like a very important mindset point as well, that, you know, with age, these numbers go down, like your strength and your biomarkers get worse, etc. But if you hold yourself to that standard, so to say, like, oh, I'm 40 now, so it's okay for me to have this lower, let's say, lower status of health, then you're kind of falling victim to this mindset of that, it's okay to be in your age group, kind of, when ideally you want to be, you're like, you know, a few years younger than your chronological age to effectively slow down the speed of aging. And ideally be like, you know, 10 to up to 20 years younger with these markers. So to have like a, you know, a VO2 max that is 10 to 20 years younger than our chronological age, and have the muscle strength that is, you know, decades younger than your chronological age, and the other biomarkers as well, to maintain like more youthful markers for as long as possible.
Yes, I'm inspired by, every so often I'll see on social media, I guess the algorithm knows me well, videos of people in their 70s, 80s, 90s doing things that you don't even see people in their 30s doing. Like, for example, last night I saw a video of a woman, I believe she's German, who's 98 years old, doing gymnastics, and she's doing better gymnastics than the typical, I mean, than practically anyone, since most people don't do gymnastics, but performing better than probably 40-year-old gymnasts are. And at 98 years old, it just goes to show that if you put the effort in and you are disciplined and persistent and you don't fall off track significantly, you can maintain this for a long time. Another video I watched was at the Penn Relays at University of Pennsylvania, seeing people in their 70s running faster times than, if I were to take a random assortment of 100 people age, you know, in their 30s, I bet you this guy would have beat practically every single one of them. Again, yeah, because he's disciplined and persistent. So it goes to show that like these stats that you see for people as they get older, these are general stats. They aren't individuals. You have these individual outliers. And that's what I'm curious of, is how much of an outlier can I be? I'm not going to say that because the average 50-year-old is not as capable as they were when they were 20, that I couldn't be 50 and be just as capable as I was when I was 25 years old.
Mm. Yeah, I think the 98-year-old gymnast, I think you might have seen my post on Instagram where I made a reel about her, and the video, the video got like 10 million views, so it went kind of very viral. And even that's, maybe you might have seen that particular video from my, my stories.
It probably was. Thank you for that video. It inspired me last night.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, that's the reason it went viral. It got 10 million views because the kind of amazing story of a 98-year-old. I think in the video she was 91, but I mean, still, 91-year-old woman doing planches, doing handstand on the parallel bars, and
yeah, that's what I saw.
Kinds of planches, amazing tricks. So yeah, it, yeah.
Yeah, I was. I was showing my girlfriend and her father who's visiting from out of town and saying, like, that's a planche. And practically nobody is ever able in their entire life to do a planche. And she's in her 90s doing a planche. That is unbelievably impressive.
Yeah. Most, like, 20-year-olds aren't going to do that as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, there's many stories of that, like this 100-year-old sprinter who is like got the world record for the seniors, and he ran like 60 meters or something in 18 seconds or something like that. So it's pretty like amazing to see old people maintaining like such high levels of fitness into their late years.
Yeah. And then my question is, how much better will we be able to do, right? Because we are, although there's this this split between the average person who is unfortunately very unhealthy, and then those like us who are more healthy than people were, at our age 50 years ago. So then the question becomes, what could we, if we maintain this, what could we potentially do when we're 90 or 100, especially because we learn that much more about aging, new interventions are invented or discovered. So in theory, we can potentially do quite a bit better by the time we hit those ages, or at least that's the hope.
Yeah, yeah, the longevity scale velocity is also something, yeah, many people hope is going to happen, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great to talk with you, and I think people learned quite a valuable information. So where can people learn more about you? Where can they find Novus, and where can they learn more about your work?
Sure. So learn about me, the things that my interventions, my biological results, I share on my blog. It's slowmyage.com. And I'm also on X and Instagram. And I believe recently we set up a TikTok account, though I'm not on that as much, as Slow My Age. And then Novus, of course, is novuslabs.com. We're on all of the social networks. And we didn't have a chance to talk about this, but we are also in the process of rolling out a free mobile app. This app is going to provide a free biological age clock output that is based on a survey, and it leverages AI. It was produced at University of Washington. We collaborated with their researchers to get it into our app. It's more accurate than the first generation blood tests. So the Horvath clock, for example, this is more accurate than that based on a survey, 100%. Free on our app. It's called Novus Life. In addition to that, we also then provide free lifestyle guidance based on how you respond to questions. We'll then provide you with personalized guidance for how to improve your biological age and essentially your longevity lifestyle. And then there's also an AI trained bot within the app to be able to answer any specific questions you might have. That bot will typically have the answer for you trained by Novus and our researchers.
Gotcha. We'll put the links in the show notes. And my last question is, what's this one piece of advice or a habit that you wish you adopted sooner?
Well, I think, although I learned this 10 years ago, I wish I learned it even earlier, is, as I mentioned before, the fact that aging is malleable. It is something that we can have a real impact on. And that, I think that's the most empowering thing. When we, as a company, advertise our products on social networks, we oftentimes hear from people that aging is something that's like written into our genetics, or God will decide how long they live and so on. And I just can't help but feel like that's disempowering. It's feeling like it's not up to you and the decisions you make to determine how healthy and long you live. And the more people that we can educate and inform and make them aware that the decisions they make can and will slow down their aging, which will then provide so many more benefits in terms of enjoying life and making the most out of life and spending more time with your loved ones and them with you. And that's ultimately what this is all about. And I think that that's one of the most important lessons that I've learned in the past decade.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, it means that the effort you put in can actually, determine your results, or can give you greater, returns in the future. If you just take care of your health now, then, you're going to be that 100-year-old sprinter and doing planches when you're 90 years old.
Exactly. Reduce the suffering in the world. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, well, it's been great talking with you. And yeah, thanks for coming to the podcast.
Of course. Great to talk with you too. Thank you.